This is Voices of Lancashire, a podcast about migrants who live in Lancashire and made their home here. I am your host, Lara Mumesso. I live in Lancashire and I am an Italian migrant myself. Voices of Lancashire is born out of my personal experience, which I am sure is shared by many other immigrants. How many times have people asked us the question, "Where are you from?" And how many times have the same people made assumptions about who we are and what we do here, precisely because of our nationality? Assumptions that do not necessarily correspond to our life stories. Out of this experience, I decided to create Voices of Lancashire, a space where migrants who live in Lancashire talk about their life stories, why and how they moved to Lancashire, their impressions of this part of the world, their ambitions and their everyday life experiences in a place that has become their permanent or temporary home. For this first series, Voices of Lancashire will consist of 12 episodes published fortnightly, each with an immigrant living in one of Lancashire County districts. If you are an immigrant interested to know more about the experiences of other fellow immigrants, or a local interested to know more about the life experiences of your new neighbors, this podcast is definitely for you. Follow me. Hi everyone! Today's episode is with Marian, a Dutch artist who lives in Darwen in East Lancashire. From Aduard, a village in the northeast of the Netherlands, Marian arrived in Liverpool for the first time in 1979 for a gap year looking for adventure and new life experience. Fascinated by a place where, differently from her hometown, all things seemed to be possible, a few years after she decided to come back to the UK, and this time was Manchester, and she came to study fine arts. 40 years have passed since then, and Marian is still here in the UK, a Darwen resident since 2000. So thank you so much for being with us, Marian, today.
Hello, Lara. You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So, Marian, the first question I would like to ask you is, how did you decide to come to the UK your very first time more than 40 years ago? And why later on did you decide to remain?
So, I was 18 when I first came, and I was not finished with school. I had another year to go. And in those days, that you could go and travel to different countries and do like voluntary work there. So I decided to come to England because I was always interested in working with people, and I didn't want my language to be too much of a barrier. You know, I was still learning, but I thought, you know, other than like French or German, I would struggle more. So English seemed kind of doable. And so I found a project that sounded interesting in Liverpool. And this was a sort of community arts project. And it was a very sort of hippie experience with communal living and meetings and rotors. And it was people from all over the world. So it was totally, totally fascinating. And parties. You know, incredible sort of buildings, places that, you know, the place where we stayed was like old, like Georgian's beautiful house, you know, that sort of, yeah, that sense of history. It was really amazing. I spent a month there and I learned there that I could manage, you know, that I could have real friends through a foreign language. So that was that. So then when a year later I was finished, I finished my high school and I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do next. I thought I'll go to England again and I will do a whole year of voluntary work and have the sort of life experience that I was hungry for. You know, I wanted to be away from home and have an adventure. So that's how I came back when I was 19. And then I was working with young people and in a very interesting environment, very challenging, down in Wiltshire, And I was offered, I was asked to stay and work, have a proper job, which I did. And that ended up in a sort of, in a kind of 4-year period, after which I was really sure I really had worked out what I wanted to do, and it was to go to art college. So I thought, initially I thought, oh, I will go to Amsterdam. That looks like a really cool place to study art. But sadly, Amsterdam Art College wouldn't have me. I couldn't quite compete with the other people that were fighting for a place. So then later I decided I thought I will stay one more year and I will do a foundation course, and then I will have a really good portfolio, and then I will knock on the door of the Amsterdam Art College again. And then, of course, things worked out a little bit different because I met a man, and I said to the man, I will make a compromise. I will go to London, and because I thought that's, you know, if I'm not going to the continent, London's got to be pretty exciting, kind of the next best place. So that's where I ended up studying for my degree, having done my foundation at Manchester.
I see. So it's a mix between opportunity and maybe destiny, right?
Yes. Life is like that, isn't it, Laura?
Yes.
You can't be completely in control.
Yeah.
And it is an adventure.
And actually, that's the beauty of life. Imagine if we are in control of everything, there's no surprise. And yeah.
Exactly. And it's, I think, making art is exactly the same as that as well. You don't make really exciting art if you try to be too much in control. And I think the most kind of creative and exciting things happen when you're somehow not quite in control, and when accidents happen and you then kind of respond to those accidents. And then you get something like that you could never have dreamt of, but it has become, it has, you know, been created. And those, you know, and then if I look back on the sculptures or paintings or drawings, you know, that have been made with that sort of accidental kind of ingredient, then those are the things I never get bored of. You know, those are the things that can still excite me many, many years later.
Yeah, we will speak a bit more about art later on. What is interesting is also that in this podcast, mainly by chance, I have interviewed 3 artists, Enisa, photographer, Gosha, painter, and you, a sculptor. So it's quite interesting to see this concentration of foreign artists in Lancashire. It's a very nice thing about Lancashire, most probably, and the kind of people it attracts. So when we chat some time ago, you mentioned something that for me was very interesting. And you said that when you arrived in the UK, for you, the UK represented a place where all things seemed to be possible. So can you tell us what was possible here that was not possible back in your home?
Well, it was possible to do the voluntary work. I think that is still maybe the case, you know, that there are a lot of voluntary work organizations, and it seemed like, yes, you were welcome, and you could, you know, you could join a project and learn kind of as you go. I am sure that if you wanted to do something, you know, working with people, and I was working at that early stage with quite troubled young people. Yeah, that's in Holland. You would never. You would have had to done a degree and had the papers, and so yes, that is what I meant, Lara.
So all these things in the Netherlands would have been hard to do it.
Yes, it's I think more, you know, it's a bit more bureaucratic and a bit more formal. We also are more formal in the way we speak to each other. You know, we have in the way of the French do, where we say, you know, we have vous and tu. I mean, you know, the polite form to older people, and yeah. strangely enough, we are also kind of keen on, oh, we shake hands more, you know, kind of formally. So, yeah, but also in terms of you need papers and degree and qualifications for before you let loose on something new. But yeah, here I think definitely think more things are possible.
That's a very interesting view. For me as well, the UK is a land of opportunities. It's where I got my PhD here. I got a permanent job, the job of my dreams. So all these things are things that in Italy I should have, I wouldn't say struggled more, it's simply a different pathway, more bureaucratic in the Netherlands, different cultures.
Yes, similar. Also, I'm thinking of my husband. He wanted to start a business, like a food business, and we were looking in Holland, and it was all very, you know, difficult, a lot of red tape and so on. Whereas here, yeah, you're losing so much that you know, not lots of hoops to jump through at all. Yeah. So yes, I, in that sense, again, that was the same.
Good. Very interesting. So you told us that you moved, you've been in various places. You arrived in Liverpool, then you've been in Manchester, London. And for the last couple of decades, you lived in Darwen, in Lancashire. So I've never been in Darwen. So all I know is through reading and asking around. So can you describe Darwen from the perspective of a foreigner? How is it different or similar to other places you lived in the UK? And how is life there?
I think Darwen is uniquely, completely different. Although I suppose it is, I mean, it's very much Industrial Revolution written all over the town. I mean, and of course, it's not the only place like that. You know, of course, there's kind of Burnley and Preston and lots of places around Manchester have that look. You know, it was the most sort of, for me, very present here. And then the next thing about Darwen is that it follows the line, the flow of a river. The river is also called Darwen. And that means it's in a valley. So it means it's very stretched out. So which is in a way a bit of a pity, because it kind of, it means the center is a bit, you know, you blink and you're past it. There isn't so much in the center. But it also means that, like, the hills are on either side, you know, it's very much in that sort of valley shape. So it means that, you know, you're never far from the hills and from the beautiful wilder sort of moorland that we have on the hills, the sort of West Pennine hills around Darwen here. Absolutely lovely. So yeah, so and I think you get a really strong sense that there was a history here. Yeah, that there was a time here where there were lots of mills and there were chimneys and there were lots of, you know, housing is very, lots of terraced housing, which was like built for the workers. So even though, you know, a lot of that has changed, it still has quite a sort of working, you know, there's industry here, there's like metal and yeah, other kinds of industry that are, you know, that have sort of taken the place of the cotton and so on. So yeah, that's Darwen for you.
Yeah, it's, as you said, it's very similar to many other cities in the area, those post-industrial cities, right? You can really feel the Industrial Revolution here. Since I moved here that I feel it.
Yes, and I love it, don't you?
Yeah.
I think really interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it's the character of this area. And I like, actually, I started to appreciate also the architecture, but also the social history of this area. I like to learn about these things.
Yes, exactly, me too. You know, before we were kind of maybe looking more focused on older places, you know, maybe which is more what we have and what I'm sure you have in Italy, you know, like medieval places and further back. But here it is, like very nice sort of 19th century development, isn't it? And yeah, it has its own. And I like that sort of work, that it's a workplace. It's not beautiful, but it has, yeah, you can almost imagine people going off to work sort of 100 years ago to the mills and so on. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was your first impression of Darwin when you went there?
Well, it was that, I suppose. Well, we had friends who had also moved from Manchester, and we had lived, you know, for more than 10 years in Manchester before this time. So, yes, it was that. It was just sort of interesting, very different. And also, well, it's of course, so more country, of course, than Manchester. So for me, it was also it felt a little bit like coming home, because I'm from the countryside and we found this old house here in Darwin, which feels a bit like a farmhouse. So yes. And I just absolutely love that wherever you look, you always see like a hill. Yeah, and the horizon is not like in Holland where it's always low and flat and straight. You know, here, yeah, you look straight at the hills. So, yes, just exciting and different.
It's nice that you mentioned where you come from. So that's a village called Aduards in East Netherlands. And I'm curious, can you describe to us Aduards and also your life there when you were there?
Okay, so we would say North Holland, not East, but I mean, in truth, it's Northeast.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so I grew up on a farm, and the farm was sort of set in its own, you know, space. It was not in a village, but we were like part of a village where I went to primary school. Well, what's really interesting is that this part of the world used to just get flooded every year. You know, every winter, you know, with the seasons and with the, the rain and the sea coming in. So the name of the village means that it's an old little hill, and with hill it means it's one that's made by people. So this is what people have done a very, very long time ago, is they built themselves a little hill to keep their feet dry and maybe their animals and so on. So, yeah, so that is the sort of landscape, really, really flat. And every now and then you can, if you travel around, you come to a little, I mean, it's hardly a hill. It's a sort of little, you know, where you see, the land is just going up a tiny bit here, and there's a little church on top and some houses and so on. And so, yeah, so I grew up on a farm. And it was sort of not intensive farm, and we just had grass really, because it's too wet there to grow crops. So yes, that is, we all kind of helped. My brother helped much more than my sister and I, because it was a kind of, you know, it was divided, you know, boys did more than girls on the farming side. But we all, you know, we were quite actively involved. We used to help with the haymaking. We used to help, you know, bring the cows in for milking, or help when the calves were born. Sometimes they needed, you know, actually pulling from the out of their mothers. So yeah, so quite a real experience. Yeah,
I remember when I was little, my mom didn't want me to see when they took me away every time at my grandfather. So for me, still, it's not a mystery, but I have this memory that I couldn't see how cows did there.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No, I saw all of that. And I even remember once there was a cesarean, and we all stood around and watched, you know, the whole process. Yeah.
It must be very interesting. And also rich for a child to grow up in a farm with all the availability of animals to interact with, to learn from them.
Yes, yes, I agree. I love, well, I think that like being so familiar with these animals, especially cows I'm talking about, that just, I think that is for me like an influence in what made me a sculptor. You know, like I was kind of curious about those, just their anatomy. And I used to always draw them, always and always. And so, yes, yeah, so, yeah, so I do think that is, and also, I suppose, an enduring kind of theme in my work is like animals and how we connect with animals and, you know, how we, yeah, you know, that relationship we have. Yeah.
You just touched upon a nice point that is linked to another question I wanted to ask you, because I checked a bit the art of you do. You're a sculptor, and I see your subjects are indeed very much based on animals. I saw animals of all kinds, hares, cows, mammoths, apes, but many other. And actually, they are distributed all over Lancashire in cities as well as in natural environments, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, well, actually, I have work really quite spread over the world, you know, but I haven't been, but my sculptures have been. So I mean, you know, things, yeah, I've once had a sculpture exhibition in New Zealand, which sold. So someone in New Zealand has a sculpture of mine. I have some work in Hong Kong, in the English embassy, and then I have some work in America, and I've sold, yeah, so it's quite and yeah, different places in the UK as well, but yeah, and then of course in Lancashire. Yeah
and most often they stay outside, they are affected by the elements, am I right?
Yeah, I like to exhibit them outside, and also, well, what I like best to do is to make sculptures for the, like, in public spaces. I mean, I guess if you're making sculptures, generally I make them that they can withstand the elements. And of course, you know, for many years I used to cast in bronze, and of course that is, you know, supremely suited to the outdoors. I think having sculptures in places in the public realm, I think is really sort of exciting kind of opportunity, and really I think a good sort of challenge to put something in a space where people are come across, and that they might not choose to go to see your work, but they are walking somewhere and they come across a piece. And I think, yeah, that is kind of sort of like an honor, like you said before, and you know, it has to earn kind of its place, you know, it needs to be good. And not everybody has to like it, but I do think it has to. I think it's good if people can relate to it. Yeah.
Yeah. This leads me to ask you another couple of questions. So you already kind of mentioned it a few seconds ago that your previous life in a farm inspired you. So where do you get inspiration for your creations? But also, what is the meaning you want to convey with your artwork?
Well, inspiration is animals that I might see kind of accidentally, or I go kind of look for. So, and or they quite often are also stories. So, for example, quite recently I learned about a really brilliant story about a giant cow, and it's a piece of folklore, Lancashire folklore, and this story comes from a hill called Parlick Hill or Parlick Fell. And so, anyway, it's a beautiful story, or especially the cow is a beautiful kind of element or character in the story. So yes, so that is kind of an inspiration. But of course, yeah, with cows, I go back home, and those cows are my inspiration. And then, yeah, but also, you know, I found myself in a zoo once, and I saw this monkey, and the position in which it was like curled up was kind of so, you know, fascinating that I started making it. And then I found people really responding to that posture. So exploring maybe like positions is really, you know, a sort of important part of deciding, you know, how to make my next sculpture, you know, what it might be expressing. You know, is it going to express something like awesome, like maybe a little frightening, or is it gonna be the opposite? Or maybe I can explain, I made many years ago a little lamb, and it was based on having seen a tiny little newborn lamb back on our farm, and it was very only sort of just alive, and I think. And for me, it became very much about that sort of vulnerability of a newborn thing. And it reminded me very much of having my, at that time, two baby boys. So, you know, so what I wanted this thing to explore was sort of that my feelings with as a mother, you know, those sort of new feelings of kind of feeling a bit scared about the sort of, you know, of being so aware of their vulnerability and therefore so very, a bit frightened, I suppose, of that, you know, of the step, my new role I was meant to be taking, yes, as a mother to kind of protect them and be a good enough mother. So I think in terms of meaning, you know, I generally look to explore something human, usually really deep down, or sometimes our relationship, our human relationship with an animal, but mostly I think I'm looking for people to kind of recognize something in themselves, you know. So I wouldn't want to sort of say, here's a sculpture and I want you to take this message, but I'd much rather say, here's a sculpture and, you know, it'd be great if you, you know, if you relate to it, if you can take something away from it, whatever that is that you might see when you look at this sculpture. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's art anyway, because it's impossible to have control of the impact of your art on your audience, right?
Yes, that's right. And that's for me also, like looking at art is kind of, it's always a sort of inquiry, isn't it? It's not a lesson or a dictation, or, you know, it's just exploring something new. Yeah.
What does art mean to you? It was very interesting to see the meaning of your art, what you associate to art. But when did you decide to become an artist? Was it since you were little, or is something that came out later? And what is the role of art in your life?
As I said before, I've gone to England to learn more about myself and about life, and I did, you know, working in this, like I said, quite challenging environment. Again, I found myself drawing when I had a little bit of time. You know, I came to realize that, you know, how much it mattered to me, and also that, like, this question about whether I was good enough, I realized was kind of not really a kind of relevance, because I realized that if I did a lot of it, you know, if I did a lot of drawing and making and painting or whatever it was, that it just became better. So I thought, it's not about how good I am. It's much more about how badly I want it. And then if I do get into art college, you know, I will work really hard and I will become, you know, better at making art. So that was kind of my journey. So I did end up spending sort of 4 years between school and going to art college, but I'm glad for that experience too. So all good.
I think you just said something very important. If there is any, especially youth listening to, I teach to students, so I have this in front of me. Sometimes I have the fears of my students, the concerns about their future. But you said something so important that I will tell them when I meet them again. It's not about what I am, but it's about how badly I wanted it, right? So that's very important. And do you think that as an artist, you have a responsibility?
I don't know, really. I definitely, as a citizen, I feel I have a responsibility. Certainly, you know, my goal is always to make the best art I can, you know, and it's a lot of sort of challenges and reflections that kind of go in each piece. You know, they're always, well, nearly always point of where I think I can't do this, or there's or a point where I think this is so bad, this is terrible, you know. So, but also I think to make something original, I think is also really important. You know, I think there's no point in making art that's already been made. And when I look at art, you know, like that other people make, yeah, that is what I look for. And I suppose I'm quite, maybe a little even judgmental quietly in my own head when I see people making art that is not kind of original, you know, like, and the other, the sort of yet another sunset. And like I said, if you're going to put something in a public space, it's got to be kind of sort of a little relevant, you know, it's no good making sculptures in a public space if people can't relate to it, don't know how to, or just feel completely like either bored or unaffected by it.
Yeah. Besides being an artist, you have been a social worker at the beginning, still are a mother, and as you said, an active citizen. So can you tell us about these other experiences and identities in your life? And also, what is important is, what have you learned about British society or culture through these different identities and experiences?
I didn't set out so much to do what I've done. It's again, sort of just, you know, the life's kind of adventure that has taken me into this new, some new kind of areas. But one has been to start being involved and helping with asylum and refugee support in my town here in Darwin. And the other has been to start a gardening club. And those two in my local park. So, and those two are, you know, very much linked because I, well, I care. We have a beautiful park here, and I care very much for it. And also, I think it's a beautiful space for people to come together. And I think, in some ways, it's a space like no other to connect people together and bring people together that might not. And I think, yes, I suppose I'm bothered. I'm very bothered about how we, you know, respond to people that need our support, and also how we deal with people that are different and so on. So that is what I have been kind of involved with, and not because, you know, it ought to be done, but very much because I love it, Lara. You know, I'm very kind of interested in people, in people's journey. And I suppose there's a value that I hold is about sort of hospitality and connecting with people. And there's absolutely nothing I love more than seeing people connect.
What have you learned about the local society, the British society, through these experiences, through your work?
Well, sort of both ways. It goes, cuts both ways, doesn't it? You know, like very wonderful and incredible. You know, there's a really good group of people here that really go out of their way to support people that need support. But also more widely, I feel, I despair about politics and about those people that use the question of people coming to this country to stir up kind of bad feelings between communities and so on. So yeah, there is that. But I mean, I am totally aware these same forces are active in my country. So sadly, it was only in England, but yeah.
Yeah, sometimes, especially after Brexit, especially if we live here, there is a feeling that is unique to here, but as you said, is very much widespread, I would say all over Europe and most probably beyond that.
Yes, and I think a lot of it comes down to climate change as well and sort of the pressures across the world. Yeah, we are global citizens, really. And like, you know, we benefit from having cheap things in China, you know, but that comes also with responsibilities. And I do worry about climate change and the sort of limit of our resources.
Yeah. And actually, this point you were making is very much linked to another question I would like to ask you. Because you have been here for four decades. You are the person I interviewed who has been here the longest. So you have a very broad, long-term view and perception of Britain or England. Did you observe any changes in the way British people deals with foreigners or and immigrants?
No, I think only things have been made worse by politics. And I think, yes, really, I think ever since, you know, the whole Brexit debate has been, you know, incredibly, you know, like the people's kind of innate worry about people that are too different from them, that has just been sort of stoked by politicians to get to get votes. So I think it's shameful kind of the way, you know, I think innately people are kind and supportive and they understand when they need to support one another and so on. So no, I don't think that other than that, you know, I don't think that really deep down people have changed here in England or English society has really. No.
So for you, it remains at the level of politics, but politics has not affected the way people behave.
No, I mean, it might affect the way they vote. And I think mostly they're lied to by politicians.
Yeah. So you are Dutch and you've been away for 4 decades. So it's quite some time. And I'm sure that you have had time to think about who you are in relation to your homeland. So what does the Netherlands represent to you?
I mean, I am, of course, forever Dutch and happy to be Dutch. I like to think that we are a little bit more emancipated in Holland, that men are a little bit more involved as parents than men here. You know, that is like the impression. But you know, that, you know, like I said, you know, I go there to visit and I talk to, you know, my family and so on. And it doesn't necessarily mean that I really know what's kind of going on deep down in Holland. I don't think I will return to Holland to live, you know, like I absolutely like to go and visit and spend time there, but I like to speak English. I think I'm actually better at English than I am at Dutch, although, you know, I do always speak Dutch to my sister and my brother and so on. I suppose, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? If you come from another country, you can always compare. And I mean, there are lots of big differences. Like, you know, I think Dutch are much more sort of honest and more open about, you know, which can be kind of good and helpful, but it can be also a little bit harsh. You know, on the other side, you know, I can look at the English way, which is more polite and therefore less honest, and it can also take longer to really get to know people, to really get to know what they're thinking and to sort of win their trust.
You made your point and I think you answered my question. And you also added something that is shared by many foreigners when we talk about the fact that it's so hard sometimes to understand the real message of something that is told to us by a British person, because you never know if they mean what they say or they mean something else. I think I move to the last question. Usually there are two, but the very last one is whether you will return to your hometown one day. You already said that most probably it won't be the case. But this is also related to the other question. Do you feel you belong to this country or to this county, Lancashire?
Well, yes, I can be very positive about belonging to Lancashire. I don't know why, but I do. And I really rooted here in Lancashire. I mean, actually saying that, I'm not sure that I will stay in this county forever, because the children have all moved south. You know, I love to think of myself as a Lancashire kind of person. And that's partly, it's a lot to do with Darwin and having kind of become so involved in things here in Darwin. It's a lot to do with, you know, with Darwin being small and giving me the feeling that I could kind of make a small difference here, which you know, in a place like Manchester, you're just, you know, it's such a big place, and yeah, that isn't kind of possible, I think, you know, yeah, to really, you know, and places like Manchester. I mean, I'm also talking as an artist, and of course, like, I have a really, I mean, I have such a strong identity as an artist, and you know, like big places like Manchester, they will always be looking for the next sort of cutting edge kind of artist that is going to be much better if they come from abroad, probably. Or so I somehow have really kind of grown to love this town, and also grown to love the county, and that's a lot to do with the landscape. I just so absolutely love, you know, the landscape here, you know, around Darwin, but all over Lancashire. We've got the fabulous Forest of Bowland, which is just, I think, the biggest, you know, gem around. And also, by becoming really quite interested in the history and in the stories, folklore stories of Lancashire, I have, you know, kind of strengthened a sort of tie, I feel, with this county. So, yes. So maybe, you know, I would say I'm, you know, Dutch, of course, but I'm quite like a British artist, really. And I feel I belong kind of a little bit in Darwin. And England, yeah, I suppose similarly in a way. You know, I would never say, you know, I mean, I can't sing those really patriotic songs. I just can't. I just can't bring myself. But, you know, I do love the language. I love our very mixed kind of community with so many different places from all over the world that we have. You know, like if you ask me where you're from, or, you know, I would say I'm Dutch. You know, that is that, you know, like when you, I think, you know, you form your identity in your teenage years. And so that was done, that job I did before coming here, so that I can't really change that. And or I don't want to change that, or don't need to change that. And also, of course, strangely, you know, for English people, I only have to speak one word and they can tell that I'm not English. So then, yeah, that sort of gives that away. I mean, it makes it clear, which is fine.
That's very nice. And also, I like the point when you said, I mean, just to summarize what you said, that belonging to the county or to the country is not just, it's not very much matter of patriotism, but much more of connection, right? This is what I grasped from what you said. And I completely agree with you. It depends on the personality, but I also need to feel connected and possibly to the place, but also to people, in order to feel at home. Thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing with us your story as an artist in Lancashire. And to our audience, see you at the next episode. Stay tuned. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.